Mini episode 527 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by that NBA lottery pick, your pop culture influenced look at the world of hoops. Follow them on the web at that NBALotteryPick.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. This is part 1B of the Kyle Ross History of Royal Rumble Anthology 1989.
And Rick Morris.
Yeah, well,
give yourself some credit.
I'm here with you. I'm holding the golf ball on the tee for you. But
you ever seen me golf? Look out.
Yeah, I'm going to lose some fingers. It's part one, as we indicated in 1A, is 1988 to 1992. And I'm going to say
the beginning to the best.
Yes, exactly. And in 19 for the 1A one, we gave a detailed setup of how the Royal Rumble came to be, all the basics, everything you would ever need to know in terms of background. And I would say, conservatively, that probably is about half of our 1A discussion. So if you want any of that, go check out 1A, because we're not going to reset that for you. Subsequently, we're focusing on each year, how it fits into the pattern historically. 1989 was still the tail end of the boom in the 80s, and an interesting time in terms of guys coming and going and some of the different things materializing. This was, of course, the first Royal Rumble on pay-per-view. We talked about how 88 was a USA special. 89 was held from the Summit in Houston, and it was again, it made a big difference being formatted as a pay-per-view versus a USA show. You could see the differences. Everything we said about 88 and the formatting for TV and not having the feel of a Royal Rumble, 89 was the birth of it in the way that we come to know it today.
Yeah, it goes up to 30 men. 30 obviously, men, yeah. It is the first. It's the first real Royal Rumble.
Yes,
I mean, I guess 88 existed. There were people in it. We did a podcast about it.
Yes,
but this is the first real Royal Rumble, and I think it serves kind of, interesting enough, in terms of quality, looking at it, as a good measuring stick for all Rumbles. I think it ends up being a very average Rumble.
Right.
In that, okay, there wasn't anything spectacular about it. They hadn't gotten real creative with it, because they need to, obviously, out of necessity. You just can't keep doing it. But, this just kind of shows you the baseline for what you can do for an entertaining Rumble. And it's really interesting, and we're going to talk about this with a big debate here, I think, on this particular match.
Mm-hmm.
In that, this wasn't for a world title. It wasn't for anything.
Nothing was at stake, yeah.
Nothing was at stake. And while in the modern sense that can be viewed as a curse, because it's like, okay, why do I care about this match? Mm-hmm. In the sense of anyone can win, it's a blessing. And I think that's why, you have certainly the most unique choice of winner with this one ever. Remember in our last podcast, I always talked about, all right, did the right guy go over? And I think that debate here, I think we're going to have a debate.
Well, here's the thing, and I want to point this out in terms of history, because you might not have thought of it this way, but I think you're going to agree with my point. We tend to think in terms of the hinge years of creating the modern Royal Rumble and what's at stake with WrestleMania, 92 with the world title being at stake, and then 93 and every year subsequently, world title match, main event at WrestleMania. But ultimately, 88 and 89 were the only years of the Rumble that didn't have an impact on the main event of WrestleMania. Because the next year, Hulk Hogan wins, but the defining moment is his stare down and back and forth with the Ultimate Warrior that sets up the main event. In 91...
It might as well have been for the number one contender.
Yes, and in 91, yeah, Hogan wins and gets the match against Slaughter at WrestleMania anyways. So 89 is the last year that is completely untethered
to WrestleMania. Yeah, this is basically just... Yeah, that's a great point, by the way.
Thank you.
That is a great point by you, and that's why we got the winner here. But before we get to the winner, I think we should – the other similarity this has to 1988, and really this is a similarity that would carry on throughout these first five Rumbles, I think. Well, with one exception, I should say. The 91 undercard. We'll get to that in a little bit. There was some irony there that it was actually the strongest undercard of the first five. But this is a one-match show, basically. Everything underneath the Rumble match itself, you know, it's, again, we referenced, okay, it's stuff that you'd see on Monday Night Raw today. We said that in regards to 88. A similar case could be made here. You had, obviously, the Rick Rude Warrior pose down and the Dino Bravo bench kind of taking place of the Dino Bravo bench press spot. That's something that would totally be on Raw today. It was just to set up, you know, a match.
And very tedious as well. I mean, they went on and on with that thing. I mean, it was it was always going to end with Rude hitting him in the head. It took so long to get there.
Nowadays, it's like, okay, geez, we know what's going to happen. Back then, I guess maybe it wasn't. And I didn't hate that feud. I actually thought it was a pretty effective Intercontinental title feud in the history of Intercontinental title feuds. So whatever, it set it up. You know, Rude winds up winning the title from him, so it was okay. It served its purpose.
It did what it was supposed to do.
We both talked about right before we turned the mics on. Jim Duggan was ungodly over in this six-man tag. Him and the Hart Foundation, 2 out of 3 falls against Dino Bravo and the Rougeaus. There were two feuds here.
Yeah.
Kind of, you had Duggan and Bravo, and then Hearts and Rougeaus. That was okay. I thought that was a good opener.
It felt like a big blow off to a feud. It was 2 out of 3 falls. The losers were somewhat protected in the sense of, and you didn't see this very often, of where, because outside of Hulk Hogan, by the way, who would wear the fist helmet and blatantly cheat and have Gorilla Monsoon say it was okay, it was rare back in the day for faces to openly cheat, like the way that Duggan did by winning the match with the 2x4. And Gorilla Monsoon is trying to defend it as Jesse is just eviscerating him. Yes. That was a glorious moment.
Yeah, that was always good with Jesse doing that. But the rest of it, I mean, you have a couple dogs on this thing.
It was a hot match, though. I mean,
oh, that is great. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Well, you talk about the dog match. I mean, Rockin' Robin, Judy Martin is one of the worst matches in the history of pay-per-view, bar none. I didn't even sit through the whole thing, and I can tell you that. I kept fast-forwarding, and it couldn't end quickly enough.
You know, Rockin' Robin pretty much killed whatever there was of the women's division in that era.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, it didn't last. I mean, because she sings the national anthem at WrestleMania 5.
Well, yeah.
Hello.
She was supposed to defend against Sherry, but Sherry got taken out of the women's division when she got paired up with Macho Man. So that was pretty much the death of the women's division.
Yeah, because
at that
I don't think she was the last champion, right? And then it was just sort of retired or phased out.
I think Rockin' Robin was actually the last
champion.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think after this, I don't remember any women's title defenses, and Rockin' Robin was terrible.
She couldn't work. I feel bad saying this, but that's one of the things we judge women wrestlers on. She wasn't hot either, so it's like she had nothing going for
her. She had the bloodline. She was related to Jake Roberts.
And Gorilla Monsoon makes this weird inside joke about, isn't that Sam Houston's music as she's coming to the ring, which I think it was. God bless Gorilla Monsoon for even knowing what Sam Houston's music was.
And Gorilla was never, you know,
because she was,
he didn't have the best, you know, sort of attention to detail in these old
pay-per-views. I think so, yeah. Because wasn't she like his sister, half sister?
I don't follow Grizzly Smith's exploits. Thank you very much.
Those bloodlines are,
yes. Who knows what the hell?
Problematic.
Yeah, but no, I mean, she sucked. She was bad.
Yeah.
She was a terrible. Like, I don't know if they were trying to recapture the Wendi Richter thing with her. I'm assuming that was what they were doing.
That she was supposed to, I guess, be a big underdog, but still.
It was,
I mean,
horrid. And speaking of horrid, I know
her matches put the dog in underdog.
Yeah, I know you said this kind of exceeded your admittedly low expectations. You know, the Haku versus Harley Race for the crown thing.
Yeah.
Was kind of dumb. It was interesting. You never got heel versus heel matches back then, ever. And
Race,
the crowd was dead for this thing.
Race had done.
And Race was done, too.
He had done a quasi face turn, if you want to call it that. Well, they did the whole thing of Heenan was in the corner of Haku, but then he really elevated the match by, like, whoever was on offense, he was on their side. But all along, Heenan was on Haku's side. Heenan had replaced. So we were supposed to feel residual sympathy for Harley Race.
Yeah, but no one did. Harley Race, there was no face turn here. And
you know, quasi. The only turn he took
was the one, you know, the left turn out of Titan Towers, because he was done after
two
this.
Two things about that. And at one, I know he wasn't at full health, but I haven't. I'm not the world's biggest Harley race expert, but I'm pretty sure that if you go deeper into his catalog, he does a lot more than the punching and kicking, which is mostly on display here.
Again,
Harley race worked a pretty primitive match. Again, he was sick. He was old. I don't think it's.
And he was on his way out. I mean, back then, you could always tell when a guy was on his way out, because they would phone these suckers in long distance.
Here's the thing, though, and where I say this exceeded my minimal expectations. I'll tell you why. Because I'm the kind of guy where if I know a little something about the people in the match, the fact that these are two of the top 10, two of the top 20 legitimate tough guys of all time. Haku's top five. This is a guy who's bit a guy's nose off, gouged somebody's eye out in a bar. I mean, these are legit tough guys. And they were working what was a stiff match. And you could tell they took pride in that. I enjoyed that part of it. I enjoy seeing, you know, tough guys stiffing each other.
You know who apparently did not enjoy this match?
Who?
Is the WWF itself. WWE, whatever you want to say.
They were the F at the time.
I'll tell you why.
Why?
This was edited off the Coliseum video release. True story.
Okay.
Go to your local video store if you have one, and if they happen to have Royal Rumble 89, rent it, and it was not on.
That's just a more extreme manifestation of what they did. We'll talk about this with
91. I also think it was because this really didn't matter to them. It was kind of one of those things. It's like, okay, Harley Race is out of the company. It's to them, it served no purpose.
See, but here's the thing, though, and I disagree. And the thing of it is, too, we saw this, and I don't want to, you know, go, you know, off the rails here and talk about 91 before we get to it. But the same way they basically ignored the Rhodes part of the Rhodes DiBiase Virgil match because they were going to be leaving, I think there's equity in, you know, pointing out that the guy leaving the company went out on his back. And not that they're going to say Harley Race is done, not that they're going to break kayfabe and say this was his last match, but I think that's ass backwards. Haku became king without beating anybody. Beat the last king.
Give him a tip of the cap for continuity.
But don't downplay it is what I'm saying. They shouldn't downplay the fact that the lineage, if you want to call it that, was kept intact. He beat the last king.
Well, you know, they've never really cared that much about that. Honestly, I think it was because it was the heel versus heel dynamic. You just didn't see that back then, and I don't know. I mean, ask them why it was
Monsoon
ended up. Monsoon
seemed to be trying to stir up sympathy for Harley Race, but you're right. It wasn't really happening. But it was an undercard that just kind of was.
Look, all of these early Rumbles, except 91, we keep mentioning that, is a one-match show. So let's talk about the Rumble here, shall we?
Yes.
Where do you want to start at the beginning or the end?
Start at the beginning because
I didn't
you want to
start
I
at the beginning.
Okay, well, let's go to the end then. You want to talk about who won it and
no,
and why?
Let's start. All right. Let's do this. Let me get my overall thoughts.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Go ahead.
Nothing like doing a production meeting on the air.
Spontaneity.
So I already called this an average match. And I'll believe it or not, 10 minutes later, I still feel the same way.
Okay.
The first two-thirds of this, I think, are pretty good. The last third, not so much.
Okay.
And the big angle in this, the big takeaway, is actually not the winner. The big takeaway was the spot where Hulk Hogan accidentally, and it looks so, it's so funny. If you go back and rewatch the whole Mega Powers storyline today, no way Hulk Hogan gets over as a babyface. It's just a testament to how over he was. Because it was just like, everyone would have taken Savage's side. Now.
Right.
But it was 1988, and it was Hulk Hogan, so that it wasn't an issue back then at all. But so he does the thing where he's sort of just like wildly just, you know, it's Savage and Bad News Brown, who are feuding at the time, are the only two in there besides Hogan. And Hogan just sort of like wildly runs at them and knocks them both out. And he's all like, oh, I can't believe that happened. And Savage has this awesome reaction. He looks up, sees Hogan there, and he flips out, and they get in each other's face. And they had slowly teased tension between these two for months.
Yep.
Remember at SummerSlam, Hogan puts Elizabeth, I think it's SummerSlam, Hogan puts Elizabeth up on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And Savage gives him this dirty look. And it wasn't even really talked about because Jesse wasn't an announcer then. So I'm sure that epic team of Billy Graham and Gorilla Monsoon did not make mention of it. Survivor Series.
There was a similar
There
moment.
Was a similar thing, and I think it was played up more. But here, I can't remember. You know what? It's funny. I think the Saturday Night's Main Event that I'm going to reference here had been taped already, but not shown.
Yep.
And I say that because Outlaw Ron Bass came out in this thing early bald.
Right.
He had his head shaved and started playing by Bruce Beefcake. And they really couldn't talk about it. Monsoon said, oh, that's courtesy of Brutus Beefcake. But I don't think it had aired yet, the match.
Oh, interesting.
That it shows, you know.
That's a lapse in continuity.
Yeah,
he shouldn't have been in the match if that was the case.
Pretty sure it just shows it's a different era, you know.
Well,
I
yeah. Well,
I agree with you.
You know what? In a different era, I want to talk about that for a second, too, because everything you said about Hogan is right. Because they did the thing subsequently of where Jesse Ventura played the whole thing of the moments with Savage. And through the eyes of people not brainwashed by Hulkamania, you're sitting there going, yeah, what a dick this guy is.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing. Folks, if you want to know in the modern age why John Cena isn't popular with a big chunk of the audience, they use the same playbook, but today we see through it. It's like, what a dick John Cena is to his fellow baby faces and whatever, and look at him burying this guy. And it's
they're using
the same playbook. They're using the Hulkamania playbook in an era where we don't see
Austin Rock got away with that. It was kind of unique.
They kind of did, yes.
Yeah, that should be pointed out. I'd actually heard something about The Rock, like The Rock, you know, The Rock just buried it. Like they both
he did. No, you're right.
But anyway, back to.
But it was about coolness with them, not that they were the greatest guys in the world. And therein lies the critical difference, Kyle.
Okay, very good. Good comeback there, Rick Morris.
Okay,
but so here, that was, I thought, the peak of the match.
Yeah.
So the first two-thirds are really, you have a lot of good workers in early. Perfect. Valentine. Michaels. Santana. Bad News. Jannetty. Anderson. Blanchard. You talk about some of the influx of talents.
Yeah.
You know, the Brainbusters were in here.
And any match with long stretches with the Rockers and the Brainbusters is going to get me to pop.
Yeah, so you had those guys in, and you get about the two-thirds mark, you know, Hogan clears the ring. By the way, he sells for Bushwhacker, one of the Bushwhackers in this. It's true. This is a funny story. Have I referenced this before ever on the show?
I think
I'm going to reference it on SNS.
Okay.
Chad Repack and I were watching this Rumble.
The Bob Sacramento of the show.
Like, this would have been like 15 years ago. We were watching this Rumble at his house. It was like late at night. We were watching this. And we start going crazy that Bushwhacker Butch has the edge on Hulk Hogan. Like, way crazier than any two people should have. The neighbor called complaining about noise. We were that loud.
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, you had a perfectly valid excuse.
And we're watching the
89 Rumble, and Butch has got the Duke on Hulk Hogan.
The only thing better is when my years later, when a different buddy of mine, a roommate of mine, brings some chick home, and Chad and I are just sitting there chilling late at night watching Brian Pillman versus Jushin Liger, the Christmas match that's real hard to get a hold of.
Uh-huh.
And my buddy Josh walks in with this chick, and they just make a beeline for the bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And Chad like elbows him as he goes by. He's like, dude, it's Pillman Liger. That's great.
That is the greatest thing ever. Well, you know what? And let's not overlook how the thing started, because you and I talked about it off air, and we disagree on the contrivance here. XV Smash 1 and 2.
I liked that.
Getting a little too cute, I think. I don't like the
you
things.
You had to do it, but they really were trying. Look, the point of this, and it's funny, we talk about how stringent the face heel dynamic was in 88.
Yes.
They were trying to loosen it up a little bit.
Right.
Here with the, you know, every man for himself. That was really the selling point of this.
It
that
was.
That you were going to have 30 guys, and everyone was for himself.
Yep.
And, you know, that was the point of this. So, yes, it was contrived, but I thought it was okay. I also was a big Demolition fan at this point, so that may have helped.
They got their moment in the sun.
Andre was kind of the big star early on, and he gets eliminated. You talk about contrived.
Yeah.
With you know, Jake Roberts gets eliminated. Jake Roberts comes back, throws a snake in, and Andre just runs away over the top rope. That was – look, there have been more contrived eliminations in Rumble history. I think my problem with this one isn't so much the contrivedness of it as much as I hated that storyline so much.
That was
major storyline during this part. That was – you know, that was arguably going into WrestleMania 5 besides Hogan Savage –
It's
was Jake Andre the number two match on that show?
Ugh. If so,
I mean it's a bad Rumble, a bad WrestleMania.
If so, then that shows even more of a one match show than we remember it as being. because yeah, that would be that would be really.
I think
something.
It was like the second push. Remember, they talked about that for. I have this tape of 1988 TV.
Mm-hmm.
Come to think of it, they pushed that thing so the Andre Fierce thing so much, and that like I remember that tape made me hate this angle more. Like 10 years after the fact, but
horrible angle.
Yeah. So anyway, you get through all that, and then you get to the Hogan Savage thing, and that was the felt like the big. Moment. We should also talk about beforehand. They had set up. So Savage is gone. He was eliminated by Hogan.
Here's the thing. By the way, quick flashback to what we said about 88. Because in terms of using the Rumble to set up for February, to set up for Mania, which is close to the modern template that started in 96. Remember, the breakup of the Mega Powers happened on the main event in February the next month. The final blow-up between them that set up for WrestleMania.
Yeah, oh, and I
so
never
that
got
was the
around.
Final
so,
tease.
So I started talking about Ron Baskett and his haircut and when that happened and stuff. I never got to my point, so I'm glad you mentioned this.
Okay.
I never got to my point in that whole thing. I'm talking about Chad Repack elbowing people trying to have sex and telling about Brian Pillman and Jushin Liger. Typical show here, folks. They had done that angle. Remember, like, Savage didn't help Hogan when he was getting beaten down.
Yeah.
It was Hulk Hogan versus Akeem was the main event of the next Saturday Night's main event that aired. It had already been taped.
Oh, okay.
And Savage was
and that
the
was
back,
the last thing before the main event. Okay.
And they didn't and remember Savage was like kind of like lazy to help him because there had been a match on Superstars where Savage had wrestled Akeem.
Right.
But, wow, you didn't get that on Superstars a lot. And Hogan came out right away to help.
Right.
To establish him as the more, you know, as the better friend.
Probably because they knew he needed it at that point.
Yeah. But no, and it worked. And look, I've said this before and I'll say it again. This may have been the best storyline in company history that they ever did.
It was very good.
In terms of well done and how it was drawn out. And again, you know, the fact that they knew at WrestleMania 4 when Savage went over that they were going to break them up and have the main event WrestleMania 5, that sort of long-term planning that just doesn't exist today.
Right.
You know, tip your cap to them because it worked. And WrestleMania 5 did for the pay-per-view universe was in 1989, did a gigantic number.
Oh, it did.
I mean, people...
It did.
Yes, Savage, or pardon me, Steamboat Flair was the best match on that night.
Right.
Over, you know, the NWA's Clash of Champions. But in terms of business, they got annihilated by WWE.
That's true. By the way, and an interesting thing about that time period as well, because you talked about the elimination of the match with Savage and Bad News Brown, and that they were doing a house show feud at the time. What's very interesting is, you and I being based out of the greater Cleveland area here, they actually went through with that right after the breakup at the main event of where Savage main evented a Richfield Coliseum show against Bad News Brown, I'm guessing with Bad News Brown as the de facto babyface, with Randy Savage now the hottest heel in the company. I don't know exactly how that match went. Yeah, they went through with that.
I see. That's weird, because I went to a lot of the house shows. And my uncle had, obviously, I couldn't, you know, I was eight, I couldn't drive myself. But,
see, and I remember that.
But I didn't go to, I went to the Hogan Boss Man Cage one, which would have been, like, right after that. Probably the next time around.
Okay.
It was when they were doing, because they had started doing those cage matches before WrestleMania.
Right.
And obviously, you know, they did the thing on Saturday's main event. They always did the superplex spot. So I must have missed that one.
Okay, yeah. That was interesting the way that it went.
So are you with me that the first two-thirds of this match is pretty good?
Yeah.
It's pretty entertaining. It's like, okay.
I thought it was excellent.
And again, the match was over. The crowd was hot. It was a clear upgrade.
That's what's going to account for my score probably being better than the score that you give it. Well, here's the thing. I'm better relative to how I rate other Rumbles. I think you tend to rate the average Rumble match as higher than I do. So you may have given it more stars than I did, not by much, but relative to other Rumbles, how I have it placed, I probably have it placed differently.
Well,
amongst
3 stars is an average rating.
Well, I'm giving this one 2.5.
Okay, I give it 2.75.
But see, 2.5 for me is pretty good so far on the non-92 Rumbles, because I mean, I don't want to sit here and be Debbie Downer, but I mean, I don't look at any of these matches and think top to bottom they were that great. I mean, I don't want to crap on the concept of what we're doing here, but I mean, I got to be honest. It just the spots in there enthrall me. The nostalgia of the Hogan Savage thing in there. There's that. There's the spots every year.
Let's talk about start. You know, again, it's the nostalgia lenses.
Yeah.
But God, when you watch some of these guys come out.
Right.
The different guys. And there's exceptions, obviously. There's always your Coco Bewares that come out in these old ones and stuff like that.
Right.
But it just seems like everyone's more over.
It does seem like that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that helps. That's the one thing that helps these older matches. It's not like the roll your eyes, okay, get rid of this guy already.
It was a hot crowd.
It was. And it was a new match. And let's get to the last third of the match, though, shall we? Because this could have been a better than average Rumble. I could have, and I'm assuming you would have given it a better star rating, too.
Sure.
Had it not been for this last third. So happened?
I don't know if this was in the last third or where this was. I just have this in my notes. Warlord eliminated in 2 seconds. That was sort of noteworthy. I don't remember where that was. You may have a memory of that. I don't know where
Hogan
it was.
Eliminates him.
Hogan eliminates
it's during,
him. Okay.
It's right before the spot with Savage.
Okay.
It's when Hogan's,
right.
Hogan always got his kind of turn in these early Rumbles where he started, like, eliminating massive amounts of people. Remember?
Right.
He it's contrived, but did it draw a big reaction when he ran and he clotheslined both brainbusters out at the same time.
Right.
Tully and Arn deserve so much better. But
they did.
But God, it got over. But then I think he just turned. The Warlord steps in and he steps out, and then he does the thing with Savage. But the last third, so it's set up before the match even begins. They're showing these guys draw their numbers, which is always kind of, sort of cute, I suppose, in the old days. They show the random number drawing. And DiBiase didn't like his number. And he winds up trading with Slick. And it leads to, it works out. It's kind of funny because it's not a bad number that DiBiase would have drawn, obviously.
Right.
But it leads to, so Hogan's in there by himself. And the Twin Towers wind up coming out. And shockingly, they just dump him.
Yeah.
You know, they double team him.
No controversy.
And they just dump him.
Yeah.
And that's fine because, Hogan wasn't going to. It's funny that it's very rare that I make a case that Hulk Hogan probably could have gone could have and should have gone over in a match that he didn't. You're not going to see me run to that, pound that drum very often. A case could be made that he could. Maybe it would have been more exciting had he won this Rumble. Although they were setting up, you talk about the main event a month later, Mega Powers Twin Towers.
Well, not only that, and they had to have them as a strong enough team going in.
Yes.
And I realize this is not the same as losing a match 1-2-3. That might have been his cleanest loss in his whole run. There was no controversy.
No, I mean,
he didn't do clean jobs.
Well, here's the thing. So DiBiase switched
Warrior.
The number. And they had been playing up throughout the show that there had been this funny business taking place back. And it was good for DiBiase. It fit DiBiase's character. DiBiase, obviously, at this point, had kind of fallen down a peg, probably didn't become world champion after coming in so hot. And
I have thoughts on DiBiase when we get to the next year.
Okay, all right. But I know you do. Yeah. But but here's the thing. So I thought this was kind of. This was sort of the other big storyline of the match was DiBiase buying number 30.
Yes.
Is what he did. And so he switches numbers. He got one of the early 20s or whatever. Gives it to, Bossman or a key. Sells to Slick. They switch numbers.
Yep.
And it allows the Twin Towers to double team Hogan. And, Hogan, typical Hogan fashion, reaches up and eliminates the Bossman.
Yep.
But, man, does the match kind of suck from that point. The only drama is... Okay, DiBiase, he bought number 30, apparently.
Right.
Because we haven't even talked about that. And this, to me, is the big debate of the show. Is John Studd winning? I think when you look through the pantheon of winners of Royal Rumbles, he obviously kind of sticks out like a sore thumb.
The WTF choice. And
most people, I think, especially modern, newer fans that were on there are like, they look back, what the hell, John Studd, that's a weak winner. And to be honest with you, playing the role of bad cop, he is a weak winner because he didn't go on to really do anything. He quit the company mid-'89, kind of mid-push. The thing with him as a face and Andre as a heel, the roles reversed from their famous feud years earlier.
It would have been interesting. It would have been interesting to see. I thought.
Not in the ring. It was bad. Andre didn't like him, and the matches were among the worst in history.
Again.
The matches, they worked on the house shows together, and it was really bad.
From what I've heard, Andre didn't like a lot of big guys who he perceived as being a threat to his unique gimmick. So I'm not going to hold that against John Studd if Andre didn't like him.
Okay, yeah. But, John Studd babyface was...
It was interesting. You know, again, he's a guy, and I feel bad dumping on him because, from all accounts, a very nice guy, a guy who sadly died tragically young, I believe, from cancer. So who deserved better in life than what he got on this earth here. And who was, always a pretty good worker for a big man. Not your stereotypical.
Really?
Boy, if you're grading on the curve of big man, sure. Some of his earlier stuff, Mid-Atlantic days, whatever. John Studd was a guy who could bring it for a big guy, I thought. So I take no pleasure in dumping on him. But I'll say, again, I don't feel like it's revisionism to your point, because even if he worked a big summer series against Andre, and maybe it culminates at SummerSlam, whatever, I still don't know that it would have been worth it to put him over in this match here.
Well, here's the thing. It worked in a sense that, I'll contradict myself here for a second, that I talked about, maybe Hogan should have won here. I think it's probably for the best that Hogan didn't win here and someone kind of random won. And if you're looking beyond Hogan Savage and you want a baby face, I suppose John Studd, who the plan was to push, is as good a choice as any. They gave him a late number and they were putting over the luck of the draw. Remember, that it was it's funny now. Because number 30, for the longest time, never won. It's won a couple times. But now it's not considered a huge deal to go get an early number and stay in all the way. In this Rumble, in particular, no one from the early numbers was left at the end.
A lot of turnover.
Yeah, so it was almost like a whole new – the match almost restarted in the bottom third.
Yes.
Or in this, the last third of the match, I should say. And they just wanted to put all that over, so – I guess it was okay, but it is, when you look at the other winners, and again, we're not dealing with the road to WrestleMania here with John Studd.
Right.
It's all underwhelming, but I guess I can see why they did it, but it does kind of hurt the match, I think, that someone who really didn't go on to do anything in the months that came wins it.
I think so, too, and it's
But it wasn't for anything, this match.
Well, no, it wasn't, but again, listen, I struggle to think of who it could have been exactly. I don't want to sit here and be, the smart mark looking at it, through modern lenses in 89, but to me, putting over somebody on his way up would have been better than a John Studd that had the one feud in front of him.
He had just come back.
Yeah, yeah.
He had come back, right before us, because he wasn't on the 88 Survivor Series card.
Right.
And even if, he may have come back right before then anyway, even though...
Right.
God, that card needs some people on it. But, there had been a pretty strong turnover, roster turnover in late 88.
There had been, yeah.
And he comes in and, again, so he was new. So it fit well. Here's a guy, he's just come back, we're going to put him over strong.
True, but here's the thing. I mean, what was his future beyond the Andre feud?
I don't know.
You're looking at a guy that only really had the one.
They may not have been looking at that. I mean, a lot of these guys, they're not. Well...
But I think they.
I should say, but I think there have been a lot of Rumble winners where they haven't necessarily looked at it beyond okay. Well, I mean, there's always WrestleMania, to consider.
Right.
But I think they're always kind of looking at it in just sense of okay, this year.
Right, and that may have been the case. That may have been. But the other thing is too, I thought it was kind of awkward stylistically in terms of you have the giant in the match and everything. But, more times than not, the giant that everyone's trying to get rid of is a heel. Here, he's kind of the smiling baby face, so you're not really getting heat on the guy. Him and DiBiase at the end was fairly anticlimactic. DiBiase, they never really played it up for him, but, I mean, for a guy that wasn't a big guy, was relatively tall, so it wasn't, and John Studd was not a legitimate 7 foot either. So the gap between them height-wise wasn't as jarring as one might expect, but still, DiBiase is not the guy anybody thinks of as a physical threat. If anybody was going to be in there at the end, one-man gang with the purpose he served the previous year. You mentioned Andre. One-man gang again had a nice long stretch this year. Maybe if Gang had made it till the end.
Well, he was Akeem at this point.
He was Akeem. Okay, I'm sorry.
He gets to the last three. It's Stud,
that's
DiBiase,
right. That's right.
And Akeem. So they do kind of get him in
then
there.
I think
they were
it should
playing
have been,
that up. And good God, you're talking about some of the worst
matches
ever.
But I think it should have been DiBiase that went out first.
Okay, well, they were playing up the.
But you're right.
The whole
you're right.
Buying number 30 thing was, other than the mega powers.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Stud winning this thing was almost kind of like third in the pecking order of storylines. It was what happened with the mega powers.
Yeah.
DiBiase buying 30. And then it was like, okay, John Studd won.
Well, I don't know that it necessarily reinforced DiBiase's character any more than the
they
other
things.
They
talk about it. I mean, I know that you have this huge bone to pick in the next couple
continuity,
of years.
Yes,
with
continuity, yes.
With not talking about what happened in previous Rumbles.
How come they didn't?
This always talked about.
How come
Teddy if Gorilla Monsoon, God bless his soul, was still alive today and Teddy Biasi walked out, I'd be like, oh, remember that time he bought number 30?
Okay, there is that. And they didn't talk about that subsequently. But how come no talk during the match of, we're guaranteed not to have a repeat winner, folks. Hacksaw Jim Duggan was in the first match on the card.
You know, I don't know. People don't care that much about that stuff.
Really?
You do.
Maybe that's me being Nelson nitpicker, but they don't want to talk about.
I'm not gonna side with you on that.
They don't want to talk about anybody else's history, but now they don't even want to leverage their own history. I don't understand.
It's funny because he's not. You know, quick peek ahead, he's in an undercard match in '92.
Very, very strange. Yeah, the guy that wins the first Rumble is not in it the next 2 years.
They did seem to go out of their way to make sure that you did not remember Hacksaw Jim Duggan won 1988 Rumble. Maybe it's because he was being phased down. And they just sort of were like, yeah, we don't want to talk about this match that we're promoting as this big deal. And Jim Duggan and John Studd were the two winners.
Yeah, true.
That might have been it.
That might have been.
You happy now?
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll buy that as a reason for it. But again, I give it 2.5 stars. While my rating isn't as high as yours, relative
to a quarter star, but we're in the same neighborhood.
But here's the thing, though. Relative to how I'm rating other Rumbles, I guarantee I'm being more generous. You're rating it 2.75 stars because you're rating a bunch of other matches higher than that. I'm rating a bunch of other matches lower, I'm guessing, than my 2.5 stars. I'm certainly rating a lot of other ones.
Hold on here, Richard J. Morris.
R, actually, but go ahead.
Okay. J-A-R-R. Okay.
As I just made it easy for any identity thieves out there, Richard R. Morris, okay?
I would rate, there are 11 Rumbles I have rated lower than this one.
11 Rumbles? Okay. All right.
Like I said, it's kind of in the middle.
Middle of the pack. I'm guessing this is going to be above middle for me by the time it's all said and done.
Wow.
But I'm going to have them close together. I mean, for me,
most of them are close. I would say 90... The majority, I don't want to give a percentile, I was going to say 9%. Almost all of them are between, like, 2 and 3.5.
I think the bell curve is going to, my particular bell curve, the fat part, is probably, like, 1.75 to 2.75,
Jesus.
Probably.
What are you, wrong?
Yeah.
You don't enjoy the Royal Rumble?
Like, it's...
How bad does a Rumble have to suck to be 1.75? There's, like, I have, like...
Hint, we're going to find out in part one. We're going to find out.
Wow,
I have one in there.
You're pretty tough.
Yes, I am.
There are only 5 Rumbles I have rated lower than 2 stars.
I'm tough but fair.
Okay.
But that's how I would sum it up. So 89 again. I thought it was pretty good. You thought it was pretty good, right?
Average.
Average, okay.
Average is the word here.
All right. Average. All right. I'm sure we'll have better things to say about some of the ones coming up. And considering that 92 is in part one, I know that will be the case before it's all said and done.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.